This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 19th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 278. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. The big deal feature. A year after the trucker convoy, the Public Inquiry Commissioner's verdict. Hear from Paul Rouleau, Justin Trudeau, Pierre Poilievre, and the head of the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or should we really be surprised that the Liberal government put its self-interest ahead of national security and sovereignty of Canada? A decade ago, Justin Trudeau was seeking to rebuild the Liberal Party when he made these remarks at a meeting in Toronto.
There's a level of admiration I actually have for China, because their basic dictatorship is allowing them to actually turn their economy around on a dime and say, we need to go green as fast as...
His father, Pierre, opened Canada's diplomatic ties with Mao's China in the 1970s, so it was really no surprise that Xi Jinping greeted Trudeau with open arms. Almost a year after becoming prime minister, Justin Trudeau led a trade mission to China in 2016. He earned himself the nickname that he would eventually regret. Here is now Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland.
It's the Prime Minister's first trip to China, and really this trip is aimed at restoring, refreshing, strengthening the Canada-China relationship. We're quite proud. The Prime Minister has been given a fond nickname in China.
Which is?
He is called Tudo, which I believe means potato, and I can't say the Chinese word, it's Xian Tudo, little potato, because his father, Pierre Elliott Tudo, was senior potato. So we feel we are off to a great start. I do want to thank our Chinese hosts. They've been very, very warm. And we really believe this bilateral relationship between Canada and China is really important for both countries and can be important for the world.
On February 17th, the Globe and Mail reported with a blockbuster story on a leaked report from Canada's intelligence agency, CSIS, that confirmed China had influenced the 2019 and 2021 federal elections. CSIS found evidence that Chinese state actors and their allies used a disinformation campaign to prevent the Conservatives from coming to power. Consul General in Vancouver Tong Xiaoling even boasted that she helped two Liberals defeat Conservative incumbents in Richmond. At a February 17th news conference in Ottawa, Trudeau was asked about the scandal.
Steve Chase with the Globe and Mail. Good afternoon. I would like to change the subject for a minute to the 2021 elections. As reported in the Globe and Mail today, CSIS has evidence that the Chinese government interfered in the 2021 elections. My question for you is, when the government learned of this, why didn't they expel the Chinese government diplomats involved?
I have been saying for years, including on the floor of the House of Commons, that China is trying to interfere in our democracy, in the processes in our country, including during our elections. We are aware of this, and I can assure you that our intelligence and security agencies have been working very hard over the past many years to develop more and more tools to counter this, to make sure that our institutions are kept safe. This is not a new phenomenon. This is something that countries around the world have been grappling with for a long time, and Canada is no exception. But what I think is also really important to say is that for the 2019 and for the 2021 elections and for elections going forward, this government created a panel of top civil servants who would lean on all the information provided to them by our security agencies, like CSIS, to ensure that interference by foreign actors does not affect the running or the outcomes of our elections. And I can emphasize once again that Canada has some of the best and most robust elections in the world, and all Canadians can have total confidence that the outcomes of the 2019 and the 2021 elections were determined by Canadians and Canadians alone at the voting booth.
Just a follow-up question. The CSIS reports that we reported on today, they talk about, for instance, the Consul General in Vancouver bragging about how they defeated two MPs, two Conservative MPs. There are countless examples in there of Chinese state interference. Why did this task force you're talking about not tell Canada anything about this? And what happened to your foreign registry?
We have, like I said, known for a long time that China and others engage in foreign interference in Canada, including during our elections. And certainly the fact that a Chinese diplomat would try to take credit for things that would happen is not something that is unseen in diplomatic circles around the world. The fact is that the work that CSIS has done, including with our election integrity panel, headed up by our top public servants, will always ensure that any risks to our election or to the integrity of those elections get highlighted to Canadians.
Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre's reaction.
Thanks, Carrie Tate from the Globe and Mail. I'm wondering if the story in today's Globe and Mail about China and the last election, whether that demonstrates the need for a foreign agent registry to track, monitor, influence on behalf of other countries.
First of all, with regards to the Globe story, it's clear that Justin Trudeau has been covering up the interference of the authoritarian regime in Beijing. He claims he never knew anything about it. But is it really believable? Is it really believable that our foreign intel, is it really believable that CSIS would write an entire report and share it with foreign governments without actually telling our own prime minister? Is it really believable that the many reports that have been written over the last 4 years about this that have now come to light in newspapers because they've been leaked by courageous whistleblowers inside our intelligence apparatus never were brought before the Prime Minister of Canada? Of course that is not believable. Justin Trudeau knew about this interference and he covered it up because he benefited from it. He is perfectly happy to let a foreign authoritarian government interfere in our elections as long as they're helping him. And according to the Globe and Mail story today, this foreign authoritarian government wanted to see Justin Trudeau as Prime Minister because they knew that he would work for their interests rather than Canada's interest. And that's why he's covered up this information for so long. As to your specific question, I believe we need a public registry of all those who do paid work on behalf of foreign authoritarian regimes to influence or manipulate our politics or government.
What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast.
When the decision was made to invoke the act on February 14th, 2022, Cabinet had reasonable grounds to believe that there existed a national emergency arising from threats to the security of Canada that necessitated the taking of special temporary measures. I do not come to this conclusion easily, as I do not consider the factual basis for it to be overwhelming. Reasonable and informed people could reach a different conclusion than the one I have arrived at.
That is the sound of Paul Rouleau, the Justin Trudeau appointed commissioner of the public inquiry into the national emergency declared in February 2022 over the trucker convoy protests. Paul Rouleau is a former judge and former Liberal Party insider. He noted that there were many Canadians with legitimate grievances over the handling of the pandemic.
As I explained in my report, the response to the Freedom Convoy included a series of policing failures, though I have also identified sound practices employed by some police services in their response to relevant events. Some of the missteps may have been small, but others were significant. Taken together, they contributed to a situation that spun out of control. The failures were not only in policing. Preparing for and responding to situations of threat and urgency in a federal system requires governments at all levels and those who lead them to rise above politics and collaborate for the common good. In January and February 2022, this did not always happen. Had police forces and governments better anticipated and prepared for the extent of political and social discontent exacerbated by COVID-19 pandemic, particularly in the environment of misinformation and disinformation so prevalent today, and had they collaborated more effectively, there could have been a different response to this unprecedented situation. It's likely that such preparation could have avoided the necessity of invoking the Emergencies Act. I determined that the measures taken by the federal government were, for the most part, appropriate and effective and contributed to bringing a return to order without loss of life or serious injury to people or property. I also found, however, that in a number of respects, these measures were deficient. These included important aspects of the Emergency Economic Measures Order, such as the absence of any discretion related to the freezing of accounts or assets, and the failure to provide a clear way for individuals to have their assets unfrozen once they were no longer engaged in illegal conduct.
Noah Mendelson-Aviv is the executive director of the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, and she was disappointed with Rouleau's findings.
The Emergencies Act can suspend the ordinary democratic process. This might be necessary in rare instances, but it was not justified last winter, and it is a dangerous power for any current or future government. The Canadian Civil Liberties Association spoke out then and is here today because we are concerned about democracy, about equality, about justice, and about rights. We want to make sure that all people, including in particular those with the least power, platforms, and voice, with grievances and concerns about injustice, can protest government and other institutions, that they can do so powerfully, peacefully, and yes, sometimes disruptively. This is critically necessary to ensure that everyone can learn about violations and stand together for the rights of all people in Canada.
More than a year after the protests, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau tried to walk back some of his inflammatory statements.
The first thing I'd say to people who joined these protests, these occupations, is first of all, they will always have a right to be heard, to express themselves, to protest peacefully things they disagree with. And they have been heard. They've expressed very clearly their views, their perspectives, and they're hurt. At the same time, however, we are a government that is grounded in science and data and expert advice. And we followed the advice of public health officers and medical professionals to keep Canadians safe during a pandemic. That included encouraging through every means we could people to get vaccinated. And that worked. We had a better pandemic than many of our peer countries with fewer deaths, with lower levels of economic disruption, with greater social cohesion than many other places?
Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre slammed Trudeau and tested his new message to voters.
He hasn't played a role. He is the division. His purpose is to divide and conquer. He believes that if he can turn Canadians against each other, then they'll forget how miserable life has become after 8 years of his tax hikes, inflation, and out-of-control cost of living. With costs, crime, and corruption raging after 8 years of Justin Trudeau, it's no wonder he wants the focus off him, and he wants Canadians fighting with each other. So you can expect him to continue to divide people by race, region, vaccine status, and any other fault line that he can invent. But instead of divide and distract, what we need to do is unite for hope, to bring people together and tell them that tomorrow can be better than today. Let's just remove all these painful taxes that have driven people into poverty. Let's end the inflationary deficits that send the cost of living up faster than at any time in 40 years. Let's clear the bureaucratic blockades to build millions of new homes so our young people can actually have a roof over their head and not just live in their parents' basements. And let's bring back freedom of speech and freedom of expression so everybody can have a voice again in this big, beautiful, wonderful country of ours. Let's unite our people for hope and let's bring it home. Thank you.
What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.news podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Pentagon's top China official makes surprise visit to Taiwan. China demands U.S. stop meddling in the Taiwan issue, stop creating new tension factors in Taiwan Strait. Michael Chase arrived from Mongolia. He's the highest level Pentagon official to visit Taiwan in 4 years. China's foreign ministry spokesman condemned the visit. Meanwhile, Taiwan cabinet spokesperson resigns following corruption and prostitution allegations. Chen Sung-yen announces his decision but denies the accusations and decries erasure of dignity. In Kyoto news, ex-advertising head admits to Tokyo Olympics bribery. At the Tokyo District Court, Shinichi Ueno, 69, admitted to providing a total of around $104,000 to Haruki Takahashi, 78, who exercised influence over the committee's marketing division and has been indicted 4 times for receiving bribes. Takahashi was formerly an executive of Japan's largest ad agency, Dentsu Incorporated. Dentsu had a contract to solicit sponsors and was able to outsource work. In Hong Kong Free Press, corruption scandal deals new blow to Xi's Chinese football dream. Chinese football has been jolted by a new crackdown on corruption that leaves President Xi Jinping's dream of becoming a global force in the sport to appear more remote than ever. Chinese Football Association head Chen Shuyan is being investigated for serious violations of discipline and the law. Former national team coach and Premier League footballer Li Tie also fell under investigation last year. China, ranked 79th in the world, has only qualified for the World Cup once. That was back in 2002 when they lost all 3 matches and failed to score a goal. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.news podcast. Breaker.news podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, Portland man creates hours-long scare by throwing things off balcony, firing rifle, setting fire, police say. The incident happened on an upper floor of an 11-story tower in North Portland, prompting evacuations and neighborhood warnings to shelter in place before officers took him into custody about 3 hours later. In King 5, City of Seattle will pay $3.6 million to residents and businesses to settle CHOP lawsuit. More than a dozen businesses, property owners, and residents sued the City of Seattle in June 2020 for damages. The lawsuit said the city's policies effectively authorized the actions of the CHOP participants. The businesses in the suit said they wanted to hold the city accountable for its part in allowing violence, including deadly shootings, assaults, noise pollution, and property damage. The protests and creation of the CHOP zone followed the police killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. In the Times columnist, police notebook lost, names and addresses circulated among criminal element. An officer's notebook was lost for 5 days in December. It contains names of about 60 individuals related to police activity or investigations, along with 50 addresses, and was used to commit a criminal offense, police say. Victoria Police Chief Del Manick called the notebook's loss unacceptable and a significant breach of privacy. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone. The Virtual Nanaimo Bar. Brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to hospital porters, the unsung heroes of hospitals. They help patients access services and deliver medication, health records, and equipment. It's Hospital Porters Week in BC from February 20th to 24th. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 19th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 19th of February in 1878, Thomas Edison patented the phonograph? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.